remind us quickly what the old rig was, and then walk me into the decision to transition into something different.
The old rig was 2018 Dodge Ram Power Wagon with a four-wheel camper Hawk in the back of it. And then when my life changed, I had to convert that into my guide rig and just customize it even more to carry all my dogs. But it was not ideal for that. It's just slow, and getting to the dogs is super difficult. So I know I needed to build a new rig.
How do you get where you ended up?
To talk about the transition, I knew I needed to go with something that was more reliable. In Montana in the West, I mean, you just beat the living out of your trucks. It really pushes them through the test. So the Ram was not up to the task. The Ram just started to have problem after problem. Here are the keys. I'm signing the dotted line and it's not my problem anymore, right? I'm getting out of this thing. And I got into a 2025 Gen 3, the new generation of Tundra. There's a lot to discuss about the build, so we can get into that.
Nick Larson here, host of the Birdshot Podcast, the show that brings you conversations, stories, and traditions from all across the uplands. The Birdshot Podcast is presented by Onyx Hunt and supported by folks just like you via our Patreon community. If you want to stay up to date and not miss any of our upcoming episodes, be sure to subscribe and follow the show in your podcast player or on YouTube, wherever you're listening or watching today. Tap that button for me. Thank you for doing so. And with that said, let's get into today's conversation on the Birdshot Podcast. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Birdshot Podcast, everyone, presented by Onyx Hunt. And today I am excited to be joined by former guest of the show, Jimmy Lewis. Great to have you back on, man. It's been like 2.5+ years since I still remember the day that I interviewed you the first time. I don't know even why I'm thinking about this, maybe because it's stark contrast today. It was like, it must have been a February day, and it was like 30 below zero, and I was looking out and everything was just crisp and cold behind my office there. But today is not that. Today is, it's actually, I'll go out on a limb here and say it's actually going to be too warm for November, which is kind of unusual here in Duluth. We're going to be almost at 60. So yesterday was a perfect November day. I hit the woods all day, and today we'll see. It's hard for me not to want to go out hunting on a Friday afternoon, but we'll see. Welcome back to the show, buddy.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, it's funny, but like, you know, talking bird dogs, all my friends who have setters and Britneys are much more cautious about when they'll take their dogs out hunting, you know, as far as temperatures go. And, you know, out here, like my Britney friends, it's like, oh, it's 60 degrees, man. It's too hot. Like, I'm not going. And I, you know, as a pointer guy, I'm like, are you serious right now? Like, but we've had a lot of mild weather here in November. It's been a really mild November, and I've been loving it, Nick. It just, in Montana, and I guess it's probably similar there too, up there in Duluth, like you just never know if you're going to get the early blast of winter and everything shuts down and you're out there fighting for every day. Or sometimes we can get October-like weather that goes all the way through the end of December. That's been not too uncommon the last 5 years. So that's what we're having this year, and I've been getting out like crazy.
Yeah. Yep. I'm right there with you. And again, it's almost tongue in cheek saying it's too warm, but it's like this November has been, it took us a long time to get to real quality conditions in the woods. Like it was so mild, and I'm sure you experienced this. I'm guessing your October was kind of above average warm, and we didn't have any frost. I mean, nothing. It was just took a long time to get here, but about the last week of October, and ever since then, I mean, we've been in a weather window that our grouse numbers are down here this year, but from a conditions perspective, pretty tough to complain as a bird hunter here in the Northwoods this year. So I've been enjoying it and taking full advantage.
Well, okay. You know, since this podcast is all about upland overlanding and, you know, that's the focus of what we're going to be talking about, I'm going to use this opportunity where we're talking about weather and the season to just jump in a little bit to that. Okay. You know, so my first bird camp, is opening weekend. And so September 1st, September 2nd, 3rd, you know, that first time, that first weekend in the opener.
Yeah, you this do year, an annual blue grouse or dusky grouse.
Yes, camp, yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah, I still call them blues and I have to correct myself. Yeah, okay, dusky okay. Grouse.
There's a few of you out there, yeah.
Yeah, there are a few of us. But yeah, that's one of my favorite camps of the whole season is that high mountain camp chasing blue grouse. And so, you know, to my point, as far as upland overlanding goes, something I just love, Nick, is starting in early September, right? That first weekend, and then pushing as long as I can push, like camping and hunting, like even into December, because of the joy of the change, right? The dramatic differences. And even though a lot of camps, you know, you get late season, but even early season, if it's pouring rain or whatever, it can be type two fun. It makes the type one fun when the camp, the weather is perfect, you know, just that much better. And you get to just experience the change of seasons so much more when you're out there camping in it. So,
yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're spot on. And it's amazing the perspective that shifts through the season. You know, like you're really excited in September to get out there. And, you know, I do similar to you. You go where the opportunity is a little bit better. High mountain, let's not go kill ourselves on the prairie when it's 80, 85 degrees, that sort of thing. I do my sharp tail hunt there because I don't really want to be in the rough grouse woods in mid-September. So you kind of, you take what the weather and nature gives you, but then, and you're so eager to get out there. You know, I'm hunting all through October and you get a day where it's like, it dips below 60 and you're like, oh man, this feels nice, you know? And now here we are mid-November, it's November 14th today. So I went hunting yesterday. Yesterday was like, it would be hard to ask for a better November day. It got up to 50 degrees, 49 degrees or something, light winds, started out cool and crisp. I mean, it was about as good a day as you could ask for. And it's just being appreciative of that you get to go out there and do it and see the change, you know, reflecting on what it's like walking through the woods yesterday compared to even a week or two before. Just incredible. And it is so much fun to watch the season change as you get out there and do it a lot.
Yeah, you know, it is. And this season has been perfect in Montana for that. Like I would say overall, we've had a beautiful bird hunting season. And, you know, I like the challenge of the heat in September. You know, I like having to find places with cold creeks. So my dogs are constantly wet. I like the, you know, carrying gallons of water on my vest. And I don't know, it's maybe a little masochistic part of me, but I like that challenge. And then it's like, you get the perfect days and everything's great. And yeah, then it's even more perfect. You love it. But then it's like my family, man, props to the girls. And you've had Liz on the podcast. And I think anybody who's in this world knows that, you know, she's not the average gal when it comes to getting out and doing things. And pheasants, man, she's just a maniac on those birds. And of course, so is my daughter. And we were on a pheasant hunt this year in eastern Montana. And I have never experienced hunting in cold rain like we did for 2 days straight. I mean, absolutely like a tropical storm, but 45 degrees. And so I had 5mm neoprene vests on my pointers and they did fine. You know, they were out there, no one got hypothermic. And, but I remember just loving the contrast, Nick, you know, like, oh, from those hot September days to something like that. And then that goes away and it's a frosty morning and it's perfect. So yeah, man, I mean, I just love all those differences. And we've got such a nice long season here. And we have so many different habitats you can hunt in that you can experience a lot.
Oh man, there's a bunch of different directions I want to go. And thank you. You kind of put a point on what I was driving at there, which was that, you know, if you don't have those early October days where you're kind of, you know, still swatting mosquitoes and sweating, like you don't appreciate the day that I had in the woods yesterday. So it's, you know, you take absolutely the good with the bad and you just, you roll with the punches, right? Like as an outdoorsman, as a hunter, that's what you do. And you chase the dogs, rain or shine, and you really appreciate when everything aligns and you get that perfect day of field.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And I know we're closing this, Nick, but also, man, like in the West, one another element we need to throw into the mix is the wind. Right. Is it blowing 75 miles per hour today, or is it just a 20 mile per hour blow? Or, you know, I had some clients out this year, man, and they were beside themselves. Like they didn't know how to even hunt or walk or anything in the gale we were out there in. So yeah, the wind is another factor out here.
I know there was, I don't remember when it would have been, September, October, but I remember hearing specifically from, I think it was some Upland Gun Company customers that were hunting out that way. There was like a serious couple of days where it was really windy. I'm wondering if maybe that's what you're thinking of.
Yeah, probably. You know, we those fronts come through and it just rips. So
yeah, and I don't know how uncommon it was, but it sounded like it was pretty windy out there for a few days, according to the guys I was talking to. So,
you know, I'll throw a little like wing shooting tip out there too, as far as the wind. These guys, I had to argue with them about this, and you can only argue so much with clients, but they were convinced, right? The wind was blowing so hard that when the sharp tail flushed, they had to be down from the dog because the birds were going to catch the wind and go with the wind and everything. And I was like, actually, ironically, strangely, most of the time when I'm out in a heavy wind, dog goes on point, the sharp tail flies straight into the wind. And it's actually an easy shot. And they just go and kind of hover. Now, eventually they might turn, but
right,
much of the time they just go straight into the wind. So before you get yourself all ready for the crazy, you know, downwind flush, just be ready for a flush straight into the gale and just cover them up.
Yeah, that's a good tip. Okay, so I do want to kind of segue us here, but right before we hit record, you had to let out your 13-year-old pointer to use the bathroom. How do you know when he has to go to the bathroom? He just starts looking at you, bothering you.
He starts that one. Okay. The nervous pant, the pacing. And he's blind, so he walks into the wall, and he's just like, I'm like, all right, buddy, time to go out. But he's pretty continent. For a dog that old, I mean, he's continent, so that's good.
Yeah, well, that's good. I wanted to ask you that because I've got my 11-year-old setter, Hartley. I should send you a picture of him. He's just totally snoozing over here on the couch today. And I talked about this on I think it was with Brad, an episode that went up a week ago. I'm noticing this year his hearing is degraded and his vision is diminished. He's not blind, but his eyes are a little cloudy, and I feel like I'm just noticing some things where I'm starting to see that, you know? So hunting, this is the first year, I would say, and I kind of knew this going into the season, that this year was going to be a little bit different hunting with Hartley. You know, up until this point, it was pretty much pick the cover, strap the collar on, let's go. I'm not thinking too much about where we are, where we're going, that sort of thing. But this year in particular, just what I'm noticing with his legs and his endurance and his ability, and then the hearing and the vision, I've been a lot more selective on where I take him and just trying to keep in close contact with him. And we had our couple of, you know, challenges earlier this year, but now we're in a good rhythm. And I had him out yesterday, keeping the hunts pretty short, but I think we ran for like 45 minutes. We flushed two grouse and he did his thing and pointed one bird that I have this thing about. I kind of want to mount a grouse. I don't have any grouse taxidermy other than the fans and stuff, but I create this list of requirements about a bird that I want to put on the wall so that I don't get one every week, right? But
right,
so it's got to be a gray face. It's got to have a copper band. It's got to be pointed by one of my dogs, preferably Hartley. And all of that happened yesterday, except that I didn't make the best shot on the bird and we lost a few too many feathers during the recovery. The tail fan is perfectly intact, so the tail fan's getting saved. But long story short, if it was in a little bit better shape, I might have mounted that bird, because Hartley's 11 years old and you just never know, man. But
oh man, you don't
with old dogs.
You don't. Blake, you know, my dog's name, his name is Blake, and he God, he's, you know, been with me forever, it seems like now. But you know, this year I was fortunate to be able to hunt him at all. And I just collar him up, you know, just making sure I don't lose him. But it was not an issue, because even though he would cast nearly a mile back in the day, you know, now he just kind of trots along, nose into the wind, and you know, old dog stuff. And But the year before, so last year, 2024, man, his final hunt was just awesome. And to my wife's chagrin, because she's always complaining about the pointers that don't retrieve and everything, he pointed her sharp tail for her. She shot the bird and he went and retrieved it, brought it right to hand. No training to do that. Just like,
was that the video that I saw?
That was a different dog who is awesome. I love dog. Okay. That's Igor. And I know I did not name him. My buddy Mitch Hurt named that dog, but he's tremendous. And his breeder, Maddie Rollinson, he was like, those dogs retrieve like crazy. And so I thought, okay, between the clients and me, we're just not dropping enough birds for that dog. Nobody's shooting enough for the dog to see the birds fall, you know. But that day, Liz and Hayden were along, so Liz made a great shot, and the bird landed. Yeah, you know, God, that was, you know, way out in the field, and he just went and brought it right to hand.
Awesome, man. Well, okay, again, we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but that's okay. We got lots of ground to cover, and we got things to talk about, but I want you to get us up to speed a little bit because when we chatted with you last, I don't think you were guiding at that time. We probably discussed your guiding background and that's how you and Liz met and all that. You worked at a fly shop, right? But now you've kind of transitioned back into some of that stuff and you're in a pretty cool spot.
Definitely, man. You know, and for anybody who goes through a kind of midlife crisis for whatever reason, I'm here to say that you can come out on the other side and things are really good. You can be like Nemo in the belly of the whale and get spit out someplace that's better than you started. And so, yeah, the last time you talked to me, I took, you know, from my teaching career, I took a job that was a dream job for sure. Originally hired to be a full-time writer for X Overland. And then I started the podcast with them and I was there, I guess, almost 3 years. But they just, their business model shifted and they're filmmakers primarily. So they had some big film projects coming up and they really didn't want to keep the podcast going. So I had to punt and rethink my life at that point and decided to get my guide license back after 20 years. And a big part of that was like, I was getting a lot of physicals, you know, all this health stuff. And I realized, man, I'm my eyes are good. Like everything works great. Like, why wouldn't I do this for a little while longer, you know, while I can. And I, of course, all my old outfitter buddies from the 90s, now they're the guys who have stuck with it are really successful. And it was just a matter of making a phone call. And they were like, yeah, come on board. And so I thought, well, I got a great string of dogs too. So why not bird hunt guide again? And so I did that. And so I guided full time the spring, summer, and fall of 2024. And as far as this podcast episode goes, the bird guiding, I was 99% living out of the rig that I talked about the last time I was on the show at the four wheel camper combo. I had all my dogs in there with me, and I was on the top bunk, and we were working almost every day, everywhere from, you know, going north central Montana. I went up and helped work some dogs in Saskatchewan, kind of like training stuff, and then came back. It was just an odyssey, man. And it was me and the bird dogs, like out at sea. But came back from that and knew I had to get myself square again. So got my teaching license reinstated, substitute taught at my old school for the winter and spring. And guided again in the summer and picked up a new full-time teaching position about an hour from here in a wonderful little rural community called Whitehall. I've got great kids. They love the outdoors. And I had 4-day teaching week. So on the weekends, I was guiding bird hunts for Casey Phelps, a Montana bird hunts out of Big Timber in Lewistown. And that just couldn't have worked out better. And I'm still guiding fishing trips in the summer. So I feel like, you know, it's a new paradigm. And now I've got teaching and guiding, things I love, and I want to start writing again and maybe get a podcast going. Who knows? So,
heck yeah. So what are you teaching? What grade are you teaching?
I'm teaching 9 through 12 high school English. So I've been an English teacher throughout my whole career. Just got a passion for literature and writing and always have, and love sharing that with kids. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. When we were trying to schedule this interview, you had told me you were teaching, and then you were like, you know, I can do it on Friday. any time. And I was kind of thinking to myself, what the, like, what are you,
how is that?
What kind of teacher can do it any time? But now you told me today that you got a 4-day. Why is that? Yeah. Is it because are they working on the
they're small schools, right? These rural schools in Montana, class B, class C schools, they're small schools. And all the kids, pretty much, like with very few exceptions, all the kids are involved in sports. They're heavily involved in FFA. And so there are a bunch of activities that go on Fridays. And I think these districts just started to realize, you know, there'd be a teacher sitting in the classroom with, you know, two students all day Friday. And so it's just better for everybody to shift to these 4-day weeks. And it's a recruiting tool also to get quality teachers to want to teach in the middle of nowhere. You know, for me, I love those places. So it's not that big of a stretch, but yeah, so it that's why they do it. And it's like working 4-10s Monday through Thursday. But then you got 3-day weekends, and whether I'm playing or I'm guiding, it's just, you know, it's really nice to have that extra time.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. So many, like, English teacher, bird hunter. They're like, there's like some kind of Venn diagram with English teachers and bird hunting, man. It's cool.
I know. I think Ben Williams was a health, and I can't remember if he was a health teacher or a history teacher or maybe.
Yeah, I forget.
But yeah, totally the retired teacher, you know, and went on to do everything he's done. But there's a thing there for sure.
I know. I specifically had a couple of, at least two English teachers that were, you know, I don't know that they were necessarily diehard bird hunters, but they were steelhead fishermen, bird hunters around in this area. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Mr. L's classroom. I got pictures of my pointers everywhere, my bird camps. And yeah, it's not a normal looking classroom at all. The kids love it. You know, they're outdoor kids at Whitehall. They just love that stuff. So it's a good fit.
That's super cool. Well, I'm glad, man. It's great to hear. And, sounds like you're in a really good spot, and you're, you know, things that you love and are passionate about. So it's cool.
Yeah, man. And, you know, as far as this episode goes, that's a nice segue for us to talk about my new setup, which is a reflection, really, of my new life. And I've had fun, you know, being an English teacher, right, and a literary guy. My rebuilding, you know, of a whole new upland overlanding rig has been like a metaphor for my life, because it's like, each step I've taken in building that rig has gone parallel to steps I've been taking rebuilding my life. And so, like, when the truck was finished, which is like, I mean, you know, you're never totally finished building your rig, but it's basically operable, right? And that's where it was at exactly the same time that all these other parts of my life came together. And now, you know, both my life and the rig, we're fine tuning and getting things into a routine. And so, yeah, it's kind of a metaphor for my life and fun thing to talk about as far as technically, and also like what it means to what I'm trying to do now.
Yeah, I love it. So I will just say, listeners who definitely, if they're interested in the overlanding, upland hunting, camping setup kind of stuff, definitely go back and check out episodes 209, 210. That was with Jimmy back in 2023. Remind us quickly what the old rig was. We discussed it in depth in those interviews, so we won't spend too much time on it here, but remind us what that was, and then walk me into the decision to kind of transition into something different.
Yeah, you bet. The old rig was a 2018 Dodge Ram Power Wagon with a four-wheel camper Hawk in the back of it. And with that, in order for that whole setup to work, I had to replace the suspension and the Power Wagon, because the Power Wagon, you know, the reason you buy a Power Wagon is because they come with OME, right? Original or OEM, original equipment manufacturing.
OEM, yeah, yeah.
OEM. They come with a winch. They come with locking differentials, front and rear. They come with a front anti-sway bar disconnect, just all these different things that are awesome for off-road. But because it's a purpose-built off-road pickup, they also have suspension that's super soft, almost like a Jeep, even though they're a 3/4-ton truck. So it's just outright dangerous. There's a big warning label and everything when you buy one, just a word to anybody who's thinking of going that direction. You've got to redo the suspension to handle the weight of even a four-wheel camper, which are relatively very light. So it was an awesome build, and it really came into being. I had the camper before the Ram on a Gen 2 Tundra, and it was just fine. But I wanted to upgrade in some areas, and so I tried the Ram. But that was a setup that was perfect for raising my daughter, who loves to fish, hunt, and camp. And, you know, that was, as a dad, you got a kid running around, kid gets wet and cold, you know, you have a warm, dry space when you come back at the end of the day. And we just had a lot of fun running around in that rig together with the dogs and fishing and everything else. So it's kind of like a family setup. And then when my life changed, I had to convert that into my guide rig and just customize it even more to carry all my dogs and me. But it was not ideal for that. Even though the living was pretty comfortable in the four-wheel camper, it was not an ideal guide rig at all. And it's just slow. You know, it's hard to get places quickly. It's cumbersome up on trails, and getting to the dogs is super difficult. So I know I needed to build a new rig and sell that one. And so this whole process began almost a year ago. It was December of 2024.
Yeah, so I was gathering the camper would be, you're not as mobile and nimble for like a guiding rig as you would want to be. And again, probably a little bit more comfortable on the living side of things, but you need to be a little bit leaner there so you could be a little bit more mobile as a guiding rig. So that leads you to, are you wide open options wise? Do you have something narrowed down? How do you get where you
are? Yeah, so to talk about the transition, like we're talking about, I knew I needed to go with something that was A, more reliable. That full season of guiding, you know, it's one thing to take your family out on the weekends. It's another thing to be guiding full time out of a rig in Montana in the West. I mean, you just beat the living out of your trucks. I mean, it really pushes them through the test. So the Ram was not up to the task. The Ram just started to have problem after problem. And I was actually stranded. This is a fun side story, but it's also why it's great to be an overlander, right? And have all your skills. So when I was up running around Saskatchewan, the truck broke down on a ranch where we were running dogs. And I mean, everything just came apart. The starter died. One of the rear tires went completely flat. And there was some other thing that went down, and make a long story short, like I couldn't go anywhere. And the local mechanic was in some tiny Saskatchewan town and didn't arrive to help me out for 3 days. So I just lived out there with my bird dogs, right? And and I just was, yeah.
Was it hunting
season? Yeah, it was hunting season. But I was pretty much just working dogs and not hunting, you know, just up there in the country. And these other guys would be driving by waving at me every morning, you know, and I just have the camper open and the dogs on their tie outs. And then finally the mechanic arrived like 3 days later and started like messing with the starter, and we were able to get the truck running enough to get it back to this town. But and then the heater died about halfway through the fall, so I had no heat. Just thing after thing, and I had my mechanic buddies, they were like, hey, if you can get this operable enough, you need to just get rid of it. So I was a Toyota guy before I went to the dark side and got a Ram. And after that, I was like, I'm going back to Toyota. I don't care what I have to do to the rig. I'm getting a Toyota again. Got the Ram operable. And everything was fine. It was the kind of thing where you traded in, you know, this with your background with car dealerships, like sometimes a customer probably like trades it. It's like, here are the keys. I'm signing the dotted line and it's not my problem anymore. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm getting out of
this thing. And I got into a 2025 Gen 3, the new generation of Tundra. And I went ahead, I anted up a little bit and got the limited package. Just has more tech, better seats, just a lot of things, a lot of creature comforts, and a big screen, you know, that you can use for Onyx and the like. So I really just decided to go all in on that. And knowing that the Gen 3 had a reputation for issues since it's been released, but the word on the street was that those kinks had gotten worked out. And I know the Gen 2s are bomb-proof, but I just wanted to try the new tech and see what I could do. So yeah, that was back to a Toyota, and I'm very, very pleased to be. I have not had an issue so far, knock on wood, and been running it hard. And so, yeah, there's a lot to discuss about the build, so we can get into that.
Yeah, I love it. Glad you teed that up, because I have brought up the truck stuff before, and I'm still barking up the tree of a new truck. I'm thinking 2026, but we'll see. My Sequoia is getting up there. It's 263,000 miles or whatever. And I mean, nothing crazy. It's got its issues at this point. The thing that's getting me the most is the air suspension. It's got an air suspension in the back and it's starting to leak a little bit. So like if I got to start it up and let it run for a little bit to inflate. Because if I start driving right away, the back is pretty bumpy. But anyways, the Gen 3 Tundras, you know, I brought them up on the show before. I've had people write in because I was kind of questioning the, you know, I've seen all the recall stuff and I'm a more of a serious shopper at this point. So I've looked into it too.
Yeah, I'm curious to know.
Man, it's just great. You get online and you start reading stuff and, you know, it's nuts out there. And Toyota did just expand the recall to more like 2024. So I was curious to hear that you've got a 25 and, you know, they're doing what they can do. They're basically replacing all of the engines. So it is what it is. You know, I certainly get the sentiment of like you buy a brand new truck, you think they would figure that stuff out, but that's still ongoing. But the thing that gets me is like, it's a pretty small percentage of failures. I mean, if your truck fails, that's a nightmare scenario. You drop a lot of money on a brand new truck, but the percentage of failure is very, very small. So like, everybody that I've heard from, I've had a bunch of people email me in and say, I have a Gen 3 and I love it. And, you know, there's maybe some sort of, you know, you spend that kind of money on a truck, you're predisposed to loving it, which I understand. I would be similar, but still, it seems like the positives outweigh the negatives there, at least from what I can see at this point. But glad to hear you are issue free at this point. And
the daggone algorithms, the Google feed, like I just get bombarded with uh-huh. the Tundra recall, but like it'll show up in my feed. I'm like, just go away. I'm so sick of looking at that. But like to your point, I mean, the percentages, when I see what they're, you know, posting, the percentages are really small as far as like the number of rigs that are failing still. And it is a whole new platform and it's a super high performance engine, you know, the twin turbo. That's what I have. It's just the standard gas or twin turbo.
Yeah, you don't have the iForce Max.
And one of the reasons I didn't go for the iForce Max for these reasons. One, given how I use the truck and where I wind up, I just wanted less. When it comes to the engine, something like a whole hybrid system, I wanted less tech rather than more. It just seems like that's one more thing that could fail in the middle of nowhere. It also adds weight, so your payload gets reduced. I didn't like that. And then it adds cost, you know, and you add like it's another, I think, around $3,000 to $4,000. And then I'd like to run this truck a long time. And after 100,000 miles of use, now you got to like be wondering about that battery. And so it just seemed to me to not be worth it. And when I test drove the two different engines, man, the standard gas or twin turbo is fast. It's fast. It is a fast truck and it's a stable truck. You know, I've got the Crew Max and I'll be on these Montana highways and the interstates. And if I'm not paying attention, it's like I'm doing 95 and I don't even know it. So I think I'm going to get a radar detector for Christmas because it's just like the thing is a rocket. But see, I could not do that with the Ram and the four-wheel camper. I mean, you're going down do and just getting past and the wind's blowing you around. But with this rig, it's like, oh, you know, I want to be wherever by tomorrow morning. You know, I can just be there. And it makes Montana a smaller state. But yeah, as far as the Gen 3 goes, you know, I've had it now. Coming up on a year, coming up on 25,000 miles, already put on nearly 25,000 miles.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
I'm driving it and really beating it hard. I've been on, some semi-terrifying trails in the tobacco routes where I had to use every little feature. And that was fun. Like, I mean, those things, that tech, when it comes to off-road stuff is amazing. The way you can pick your lines, use the cameras to find your wheel placement, like even with minimal ground clearance. I mean, I was able to drive that thing up a gnarly trail. And then, of course, we got all the washboard roads and just lots of stuff. And so far, so good. I love the engine. The overall performance has been great. So, yeah, reliability-wise, no issues yet. Fingers crossed. But it is a Toyota. Right. I know I'll be taken care of if something does go wrong. I really trust that brand.
Yeah, that's and you mentioned the Gen 2s. You know, I still look at those from time to time. Like, it's like you could get one of those, but I've been waiting so long to upgrade that I know I basically have that engine in my Sequoia. Like, I know how reliable that is. Obviously, really bad gas mileage, but it's incredibly reliable. But I'm not that excited about investing in that truck because it's just so outdated technology wise. And like some of the things, and maybe, you know, maybe you're getting sort of, it's like, I know bells and whistles and whatever, but I want those cameras. I want the TRD off-road package, the crawl control, all that stuff that they've got in the new one. So that's where my head's at. Now I've seen pictures of your truck, so I was going to kind of draw out those details. You've got Crewmax, 6.5 foot bed, and you have the TRD off-road package. So pretty similar to like what I would be looking at. Although I don't know if I'll get the 6.5 foot bed because I don't think that'll fit in my garage. But was there no question for you? You were getting the 6.5.
Yeah, no question for me. You know, that just gives me the room I need for everything I'm trying to do. And so it's worked out really well. And the turning radius is large on that truck for sure. It's got a long wheelbase. Yeah. But the trade-off there is tremendous stability, high-speed driving, which you do a lot of out here. I mean, Montana is a huge state, and you got to, hey, we're going to go fish the Bighorn this weekend, or let's run up to North Central Montana for 3 days. Well, you know, we're talking hundreds and hundreds of miles. I'll make some trade-offs to have that, you know, high-speed, long-range stability too.
I think those 360 cameras would be just, you know, again, we've been driving trucks without them for a long time, but when you'd make turning around like in the grouse floods and checking lines, like you said, I mean, that's like a, it's pretty cool.
And it's beyond cool. It's just helpful. I can hit that and I know exactly how far I can back up when I'm turning around on a Forest Service road. If I am on a really tight road, I know exactly where my wheel placement is. Parking, you know, it makes everything easier that way. So yeah, I'm a fan of the tech. You know, it's easy, and I'm a Gen Xer, right? So I could be that guy like, oh, this tech, and you know, right, caring on about it. But I've taken the other attitude, and you've got to learn it. You got to learn how to use it. But once you do, man, it's incredible how much it can help in everything from regular driving to off-road driving. Even some things around camp, it's just super useful. So I'm a fan. And I got the Crewmax 6.5 foot bed, the gasser, and the TRD package. And the TRD package was a must for me because you get a locking rear differential too. And that will get you out of a lot of trouble from time to time. And I would say, you know, if we want to just talk about the build a little bit, this is a downside of the Tundra and Toyotas in general. I mean, it has been since forever. They just don't come from the factory with enough suspension to handle payloads, and even a moderate payload. So like I'll give it, my backup choice would have been a Ford F-150 with their heavy half ton package. And with the Toyota, I knew I was going to have to redo the suspension, even without a camp or anything, just to have a topper, deck system, rooftop tent.
Even with the TRD.
Oh yeah, man,
package?
It's not enough. You're going to sag. Okay. You're going to sag. Okay. But the good news is, and this is like for anybody who's going this route, it's there's a simple fix and it works awesome. And I'm not sponsored, nothing. I'm not getting anything from this, just trying to help people out. So the Dobinson's suspension system, you can use to replace your stock suspension, both the springs and the shocks. And you can do anything from a 1-inch to a 3-inch lift. I avoided going 3 inches because I didn't want to have to replace the upper control arms and do any kind of other modifications. So I think I have a 2-inch lift. But you can customize if you know your build, right? You know what your capper weighs, you know what your rooftop tent weighs, how much, you know, if you have a deck system, you have gear, dogs, payload in the cab. If you can nail down your payload, right, then you can customize the springs to match the build of your truck. And so even with all the gear, including a complete front bumper replacement on my rig, there's no sag, and I can hitch my raft trailer or snowmobile trailer, anything to the back of it, still no sag. And it rides incredibly well. It's not stiff. It's not like getting airbags. It's a full suspension lift, right? So it's all, you're increasing your ground clearance, increasing your suspension travel, and you're also increasing your payload. And so it fixes, that's the biggest problem with the Tundra. And once you do that, and it's not crazy expensive, it's like $2,000 to $3,000 and you can have that done. And it makes it better too, like than any of the competitors. At that point, you just have an amazing custom rig, and it's the shocks are rebuildable. So, you know, they're really high quality. You don't have to just keep going through shocks. You send them back, they'll rebuild them for you. So that would be like for anybody listening, if you're going to go Tundra and you're going to have a lot of gear and weight and dogs and bumpers and stuff, you need to just expect to redo the suspension. You're going to have to do that. Yeah. Or you're going to be sagging.
All right. If and when that day comes for me, I'm going to be calling
yeah,
Jimmy.
Yeah, go ahead, man. I'll be happy to dial you in.
Okay. Does your, I want to talk more about like the aftermarket components that you got in there, but does your Tundra have, do you have the digital rear view mirror?
I do, but it's virtually useless because I've got, all I get to see are my dog crates in the back, which is kind of cool. Like I can.
You've got the topper,
yeah.
Right?
I have a cap on there. And so the camera, which is on the rear brake light, you know, on the top of the cab, I'm pretty sure that's where it's at. And so it just goes straight. You can see into your cap, right? Into your topper in the pickup bed. But, you know, there's a rear, like if you put it in reverse, yeah, you're going to be able to see everything. Like there's another camera on the tailgate. So you can see everything that way.
Right.
But, yeah, but the rear view mirror. That I just turn it off.
Well, my understanding is, yeah, there's two cameras. There's a bed view camera, and then there's the one I hadn't seen before is the actual digital rear view where there's a camera shooting out the back. Whereas if you didn't have and that displays right on your rear view mirror. But if you didn't have a cap, you would have that. But I looked into this, and I'm wondering if you maybe haven't yet. I saw somebody adapt there somehow where they had a cap and they I don't know if they had to add another camera or they moved it or ran a wire or something, but they have kitted it out to where they have a cap, but they still have the digital rear view function.
Okay. Well, you've just given me a new idea. Like I said, your truck's never finished, right? I am going to, makes sense,
yep.
Nick. I mean, why wouldn't they? Right. And that's where I do get frustrated with dealerships too, like their accessories departments and whatnot. It's like they should be coming to you with those ideas, and you always have to go, at least my experience, like I basically have to go find everything. But yeah, that's a great idea. And please to share with me, when you find that, send me the link to how I do that.
I'll see if I can find, I'm pretty sure it was like a Reddit forum, but I'll have to look at that. But it was something that I thought of right away. Cause I saw that and, you know, I did have a pickup truck at one time as my hunting rig. It was for a short time, 1 year. I didn't have a cap on it, only had one dog at the time. But I've always like, you know, I've been in enough trucks where it's like, man, you put a cap on there and then your rear view mirror is useless. But like, wow, this would be cool if you could actually have a digital camera feed from behind the cap. So yeah, that is, I believe it's possible. This is a while ago that I, you know, it was like 20, when the first third gens were coming out, I looked this up. So there's got to be maybe even more solutions.
Oh, God, I'm sure there are. I can't believe I haven't thought of that. Yeah. You got me on the right track. Speaking of caps, so the cap I have, if you want to talk about that.
That's where I was going to go next. I think I know what you have, and I'm very curious.
Yeah, what
about
do you
this.
Think I have?
Is it a smart
it is.
Cap?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, and there's only like, there's one version that's white, which you have. You got a white truck, and you have the white smart cap. I've looked into this a little bit. I've heard about them from, I think we did a Patreon Zoom room a couple years ago, but meaning to reach out to this guy, Scott. He got it, and we were talking about dust at the time, and SmartCap has this positive pressure vent to try to keep dust out. So I'll let you take it from there, but tell us what you got for a cap and then
okay,
what's under it.
Yeah. So when SmartCap, first of all, And I looked into this like crazy, like to see, did I really have to go with a smart cap or not? If you're going to put a rooftop tent on top of your rig, on top of your cap, I highly recommend you go with a smart cap, because they are built to handle an extreme amount of weight. And I have a GoFast Camper platform rooftop tent, and it's pretty lightweight. It's like maybe 120 pounds, so not really heavy. Yeah,
oh, wow.
Yeah, not super heavy and highly functional. I love it. But any rooftop tent, you know, anything that's say 150 to 250 pounds, you have to be aware that if you put that on a fiberglass truck cap and you're going down washboard roads, blah, 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 it's going to eventually take its toll on that and not be safe. Not to mention you're climbing up in there, you know, and if I'm a pretty big guy, you know, I'm like 225, 230. So I'm paying attention to those static payloads and dynamic,
Yeah.
I mean, if you've got your partner, you want to be up there with, so for me, once I looked into it enough, I was like, well, this is a must. I have to get a smart cap, because they're the only caps that I came across that were truly built to handle a rooftop tent, that extreme, like overlanding kind of weight that you might put on top of a rig. So I went with smart cap. And then, of course, as you pointed out, I went with the white version, which is the commercial unit, right? So they're fancier, cooler looking, you know, more features like windows and stuff. Like those are their so-called like sportsmen or outdoorsmen, right? Typical models. But they're black, man. They're black. And I'm putting bird dogs in the back of my truck. And this is the West. And the sun is like a giant heater beaming at your rig. And I have always had, for my bird hunting rigs, when it's a purpose-built setup, white trucks, white toppers. Because yeah, it's ironic, right? Because people think Montana, it's cold.
I remember this from our previous conversation.
Yeah. I'm on my soapbox here because I know guys are into the aesthetics and they like black. But I'm like, hey, man, you're putting bird dogs in there, right? And ironically, Montana, you think, oh, it's cold out here. But most of the year, it's like being in a desert. It's hot and the sun is just blasting you. So I thank goodness they did make a white unit and the commercial unit. So that's what I went with. Now, I was nervous about how am I going to ventilate the camper or the truck topper for the dogs? Like, what is this all going to look like? Is it going to get too cold? When it gets cold, is it going to stay cool enough? So that was the test that I was running through this fall. So here it is. Yes, it has a positive pressure airflow system. They're built in South Africa. So, you know, people are traveling a lot of dusty roads there, and this thing works great. I didn't have to modify the cap at all. I thought I was going to have to like put wing vents and all kinds of stuff on there, but I didn't. I never went that way. I just tested the system, and it that positive flow not only keeps the dust out, but it creates airflow in the truck or in the, you know, in the cab back there in the topper and pickup bed. And that's where the dog crates are, of course. And I mounted a remote thermometer onto one of the crates, and then I can read the temperature from my cab in the truck, right? And what I have found is that with that air system, in the white topper, it will keep the air temperature where the dogs are in the back at exactly what the outside air temperature is, which you can't do any better than that unless you get air conditioning unit, which I know some guys do now. There is portable AC units, which, you know, so you can do that. But so if it's 85 degrees out and you're driving down the road and everything's totally closed and sealed up, the temperature inside of that topper is going to be 85 degrees. When you stop, like when I'm stopping and bird hunting, it's got wing doors. I just open everything up. I park in the shade and it's whatever the air temperature is. So yeah, I've been impressed with the dust, you know, the limited dust that comes in the capper for because of that system, and also how it maintains the outside air temperature, which has always been my goal. And then in the winter, now I'm moving into the winter and colder temps, that presents a problem because
that's what I was just gonna
right?
ask.
Like if it's 20 degrees, it's going to be 20 degrees in there. Now I'm looking into ways I can cover that system up. But I think what's a better approach is just have the kennels insulated. And, you know, just like with those, I think it's like, what's it, Ugly Dog or Mud Dog? You know, they have those kennel covers and
Mud River.
There we go. And
Lucky Dog. I mean, they all got them insulated kennel
covers. So there's a way when you reach that transition where it's just predominantly colder weather, then cover up your crates and the dogs will be okay. And I'm not, you know, I try to push myself into December, but if it's insanely cold, like I'm not a lab guy, you know, so I still got pointers.
Yeah. I never really had to think about, you know, that's the one of the things that I got to wrap my head around going from climate controlled SUV. My dogs are always, you know, nice and cozy to, you know, pickup truck with a cap. That'll be new for me, but I've thought, you know, about insulating them for overnight. I never really did think about that, how the positive pressure air vent would affect the temperature with air circulating in there. But it's very obvious that would occur. So, you know, I'm doing my runs out to the grouse woods and I'm coming back on those days. So it's probably not an issue. I'd have blankets or kennel covers or something. And the overnight stuff, you're always insulating the dogs anyways. But are those smart caps, are they quote unquote insulated?
They aren't. And that's a lot of people see that as an issue with them. And I was considering spray foaming mine. But as I tested it more and more, I was just amazed that, in my opinion, the insulation wasn't needed. The temperature just stayed, you know, air temperature. And I'm more worried about heat than cold, because I can always add covers to the kennels, right? There are all kinds of things I can do, right?
Correct.
But heat, unless you have an air conditioning unit, right, it's going to be an issue. And I think the white has a lot to do with it, because it's not just white. It's like a powder coated white or something, but it reflects it. It reflects the sun, and the whole rig stays cool. There aren't even any, there's like a front sliding window, but you know, the side doors have no windows, and people are like, well, how are you going to vent it? And it's like, well, there's the positive vent system on top, and I can have everything shut when I'm driving, and dogs are fine. I'm relieved to be able to say.
Do you know if any of the other smart cap models have vented windows or anything?
I'm pretty sure they do, but they're all black. Okay. And
but they're just in the black ones.
There are a couple of these.
Okay.
Like Alucab makes a really solid rooftop tent, but again, it's black. It's totally black. And then, you know, all the smart cap stuff is black. And I just don't get it. It's like, even in South Africa and, you know, Australia, I mean, these are places where the sun is hot.
Right.
Like, why in the world would you want to fry an egg on your capper? It bothers me, Nick.
I've always, you know, it's odd. You're used to seeing color matched toppers on trucks and stuff, but with the way everybody's going now, with, you know, it's like the trail versions of vehicles are mainstream right now. So, you know, you see nothing but black wheels, and obviously Toyota TRD, they've been doing it for a long time, but now everybody's got it. But so I can see how, you know, the smart cap with a black topper and like a matte finish, you know, Lunar Rock Tundra, it works because you got the black wheels and everything. I think I could get away with it here because I'm not in the land of no trees where, you know, I can find shade and that kind of stuff. So I don't know what I'm going to do for a cap yet, but I'll be thinking about that quite a bit. And if anybody has a smart cap or another topper that they really like, I would, you know, please write in to me. I'd love to hear what you got and how you're using it and stuff. Rooftop tent is a consideration for me. So I'm definitely listening closely when you say, because I've never had one of those, but I'm very interested in doing some rooftop tent camping with my two boys, thinking about turkey hunting and some stuff like that. So I'm thinking about all that stuff.
Well, let's talk about that. But before we jump into the rooftop tent, just a couple of pro tips, like just solid practical advice for anybody like going this direction.
Yeah.
So with my build, I went with a deck system for my drawers, which I love. They're deep. There's plenty of room.
Do you have the new one, like the Decked 2.0?
I bought a new one, you know, I ordered it last December. So whatever that is.
It must be.
I'm guessing, right? Yeah. Like it's less than a year old. So it's gotta be, you know, pretty up to date. Here's the issue to be aware of. If you go with a smart cap, you will Like I have ruffling kennels, large size ruffling kennels. So not XL, not mediums, but large. And I had to get those in there with the deck system to have enough clearance. I had to have the deck system half assembled, slide in the crates, put them up on the deck system, reassemble the second component. And now they're in there for good. There's no sliding them in and out.
Yeah. Wow.
So if you want to avoid that, I would say get a truck vault system, which are smaller, they're lower, they're not as high. And then you have plenty of room to slide your crates in and out. I think they're more expensive than deck systems, but if you want to avoid that issue. And if you go with the deck, just be aware of that. I'm always running dogs year round, so I don't care. And I just use the crates for storage for fishing gear or whatever when the dogs aren't in there. So
yeah.
It's not that big a deal.
Could you get like ruffling intermediates or something? Or I mean, is it your large?
You could definitely put mediums in there, no problem. But you know, my pointers are okay. All pretty tall. They're all like 50 to 60 pound pointers, males, and they just need that space. So I'm kind of stuck with that. Also, as far as cold weather goes in just having regular crates, you can cover them up with the Mud River stuff. But if you're kind of in that transitional period of the season where it's not really cold all the time, it just might get cold at night and you want to keep them a little warmer, I buy a heavy-duty emergency space blanket. So not just those chintzy ones, but like the kind that can protect you from a downpour of hail. And they're big, and I put that over the dog crates. And then I put a Rumple blanket over that. So the emergency blanket reflects all the heat of the dogs. And then the down, you know, synthetic insulated blanket on top of that. You cover up all three crates at once. And then when you don't need it, you can just push it back over and have the ventilation you need. So until it's really cold all the time, that's a nice in-between system.
Yeah, that's what I do for my dogs. I've never done the emergency blanket. I'm kind of curious about that. I just put wool blankets over both kennels, and I got the little Govee temp sensors, and I love that because you can see, you know, it shows you what the temperature was at night, what's the lowest it got to, and that kind of thing. So I just put blankets over them, and then during the day when it's again like pretty nice out, you just peel them back and
you're not
taking a whole kennel cover off and
exactly.
All that kind of stuff.
Govee temperature sensor. What are those things called? I just have like a from Ace Hardware.
I got it right here. These are pretty cool. Let's see if the camera can focus. Yeah. Govee might be backwards, but I got to replace the battery on this little Bluetooth sensor. They come in a 2-pack. I'll drop a link in the show notes. I've mentioned them before. And my buddy Nick Adair, he's the one that got me going on these. You hang them in, you know, whatever they come with this little, you hang them there and it'll, if you put it in there at night and then you go out in the morning and you open up the app, it will show you what the temperature was the whole night. And so if it got really low or whatever, it's kind of cool. And I've thought about if you're, let's say it's September and I'm driving out to the prairie to have it back there and just kind of keep an eye on the temp, you know, knowing the dogs, knowing what temperature they're at would be handy. So that's a easy solution for that.
Okay, so rooftop tents. We want to go there?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So big change. Yeah.
Wait. Yeah. One more thing. How many kennels do you have in your?
Oh yeah, yeah. I have three. I have three large rufflings.
Okay.
And then I put one more in the back seat. So for a fourth dog, if I bring a fourth dog.
Okay, so you can get four. Yeah. Got it.
And I got cedar shavings and. You know, which are everywhere in my truck, and you know, it's like,
yeah, right.
The new car smell went fast. Anyway, do we want to talk rooftop tents then?
Yeah, what are you running for?
Yeah, so
tent?
Like for starters, for me, coming from the world of four-wheel campers, which are really, you know, full of comforts and really nice, I knew it was important to get the best rooftop tent that I could afford. And that would truly function well without issues, and that would hold up to all the abuse of all the roads that I'm driving it on, because I just have to, like, I needed to, in rebuilding this rig, get something that was reasonably comfortable and reliable, and even guiding, right? Like I could set myself up with the dogs to camp and know that I could confidently be there to meet my clients the next morning and everything's going to work and I could get my contacts in and all the kind of stuff that you need to do, you know? And so I just had to get a rooftop tent that was fast to set up and bomb-proof in the weather. And so I came down to two different tents. One was a Go Fast Camper, which was built here in the Gallatin Valley. And the other was the Alu Cab, made in South Africa. And I think they are both excellent rooftop tents for the reasons that I'm buying a tent for, right? And that I just described. But the Go Fast, to me, I like the fact that it was built locally. So if I did have any issues, I could work with people, you know, right here. I don't have to get parts sent over from South Africa and the like. And it seemed a little bit better in terms of putting gear on top, like fly rod carriers, you know, recovery boards. You can easily mount a solar panel up there. And I think you can do some of that with the Alu Cab, but especially like with the fly rod carriers, it seemed like a better setup. And even if I put like a pontoon boat up there when I'm going fishing in some high mountain lake or something like that, seemed better for that. And so I went with the Go Fast, and it's worked out really, really well. I've been just totally happy with it. And it's just been a new world, right, Nick? Like having to set up the ladder and climb up into my rooftop tent compared to the four wheel. But if you do it right, if you take the time and you just to make sure that you get a solid ladder, that you mount it properly, that you really think through everything, then at the end of the day, it works really, really smoothly. And I can't believe how fast I can set up camp and take camp down. And that's a big thing. Like I have talked to guys with rooftop tents where you got to unfold them and set this up and that up and stick these rods in there and whatnot. With the Go Fast, I mean, you literally undo two buckles, give it a shove, and you're in business. And when you go to leave, you just pull it down, tuck it in, lock it, and away you go. It's so fast, like the name says. But yeah, I've been happy with it, and it drives well. It's not very cumbersome up there. It's aerodynamic. So yeah, the rooftop tents, it's a different experience. I like being up there above the dogs, not living with them, because they roll in manure. They get into skunks occasionally. I mean, I give them too much steak and then they get a little gassy at night. So it's just nice that the dogs are down there and I'm up there.
What else? You kind of alluded to a couple things too, because it's another road that I've been thinking about, haven't gone too far down it as far as research goes. What to watch out, like, what do we watch out for with rooftop tents? I would imagine, you know, cumbersome setup would be like, for me, that'd be like, no, that's not why I'm getting a rooftop tent. So that there's that. But do some of them have bad ladders, or what else are you looking out for?
Definitely. I mean, I just want to underscore the cumbersome setup, because I look around Bozeman and, you know, so many people have rooftop tents.
Imagine you see those things like
everywhere. Every day. I mean, it's incredible, like how many overland style rigs there are here. But I'm out all the time, and I hardly ever see anybody out in the rooftop tents, using them. I mean, I keep going, when am I going to see everybody? I see everyone at the mall parking lot, but I don't think I've ever seen anybody out there like in a rooftop tent. These places that I go, and I think what happens is, you know, people are like, rooftop tent, cool, and they you know, buy one. But it's one of those.
You sold on the idea.
Yeah, and it's one of those boxy units, and they go to set it up one time and probably get frustrated and break a sweat and bust their knuckles and just think, I never want to do this again. But if you get you know, the right kind, and from what I can tell so far, like the Alu Cab and the Go Fast, they're clamshell designs, and you just pop them and you're done. So I think that's essential. Now, the ladders, yeah, man, like, I can't believe there hasn't been more discussion on podcasts and other places in overlanding community of the dangers of climbing up into your rooftop tent, because one bad step and it could be fatal, honestly. And you know, people like to get into the whiskey and camp and this and that, and then they're stumbling around climbing up in their 12, you know, 10 feet above the ground or whatever. So the antidote to that for me is a secure ladder system. So just don't think, oh, just grab any old ladder and lean it up there, climb up into the back of my truck. Like, think it through. And that's another reason I like Go Fast. And I think Alucab probably is the same. They have already thought that through. They have a ladder system. They have a specialized ladder for the rooftop tent that's telescoping. So you can easily tuck it away and you pull it out. You extend it, you hook it in a secure, reliable way to the side of the tent, and you can climb in and out no problem. But, you know, some of those, especially guys get jacked up trucks, you know, they have like 35 inch tires and suspend. And
right.
Man, like this buddy of mine, it feels like I'm in an episode or I'm in that movie, The Quest for the Holy Grail, looking up at the French Tonner when he gets out of his rooftop tent. He's like way up there. I'm like, hello. But I mean, if he ever took a fall, like it could be bad. It could be really bad. Like a deer stand. Yeah. You get, so I'd say treat it like climbing into a deer stand, you know, and make sure you got something secure. Yeah.
Now, my assumption would be that if you're buying a rooftop tent, it's got like a ladder integrated, but are they somewhat like optional or like you can do add-ons or, I mean, what's the deal?
I don't know, like some of the box style rooftop tents, I don't know if they have like what their ladder systems look like. They may have ladder systems. I would look into it, or they might just, you know, leave that open to you to decide how you want to get in there. But I think that, you know, the better quality, well thought through rooftop tents, they of course have thought that through because that's, you know, that'd be a real sticking point. So you just have to make sure, you know, it's kind of like you're going to kill a bull elk, you know, 5 miles in the backcountry before you pull the trigger. Do you have a plan to get it out? Before you get a rooftop tent on top of your truck, make sure you have a really solid plan to get in and out. And that's for your family, your kid, you know, whatever. So, but if you do it right, it's no big deal. And something I've come to love about the rooftop tent more than the four-wheel camper, even, Nick, is when you wake up in the morning, right, or you're up there at night, you can open it up and, you know, just have the bug screens and see the stars and stargaze right from the tent. In the morning, you know, you just open that window and just sit there and you're up high. And so your visibility is awesome. You watch the sunrise and they're pretty cool that way. It's like having some, you know, high rise condo patio or something up there. It's pretty cool.
That is certainly, you know, I think that's probably the idea of that is probably why you see a lot of them on roofs around, you know, cars and Bozeman. Cause I mean, that just sounds appealing. It just seems cool to like wake up and open the window and bang, you're looking out at, you know, something like
that. Yeah. And it's like, you know, some other things on rooftop tents, like why rooftop tents? I think they come honestly from the overlanding community because those guys are in places like Africa.
It seems
right. Australia, where there's snakes and all kinds of things everywhere on the ground. And it's like getting off the ground is a big deal, safety wise and comfort wise. And so whether you're dealing with a lot of rain and mud and stuff like that, or you're dealing like even camping in grizzly country. Yeah. I mean, for sure, a grizzly could get up on his haunches and stick its head, you know, near my tent. But yeah. I'd rather that any day than be on the ground in a little pup tent with that thing walking around. You know, and rattlesnakes and this and that, like you're up off the ground. And once you're up there, like I'll bring my pepper gas up there, my Glock. And it's like, okay,
sure.
I'm good. Like I've got the advantage of the high ground, as the military guys would say. There's some real wins to that.
Have you had it out in high winds?
Yes, I have. Being in the West, right?
Okay.
That was a huge concern of mine, and it had a lot to do with which tent I chose. The tents that are pure pop-up, like pop-up from four sides. Now all four sides are canvas, and even though some of them are very tight, it's still, right, or whatever the material is, it's still just tent material. And the others, you know, some of them have flaps and overhangs, and the more tenty they are, right, the more you're going to struggle in the wind is how I see it. Whereas the clamshell, like a Go Fast or an Alu, if I've got a really strong west wind, say, or I guess, you know, northeast, whatever direction it's blowing, just predominantly it's from the west out here, I point right into it and open the clam up, and then it's just streamlined, and it's not that bad. But I, even with the four wheel, I would always have a set of foam earplugs around, and that always helps if you get, you know, a lot of noise, even bellowing cattle.
Yeah, I love it. All right, so we got the Tundra, Smart Cap topper, deck system, a rooftop tent, Rufflin kennels. Let's talk power coolers, water. You know, some of those basics camping. I think you had a solar setup on your old one. Do you need to run anything like that? You know, the new trucks they've got. They got outlets and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and with that Gen 3, when you go to get a Gen 3, I had to go through an extensive search to get a TRD package. I don't know why, it's just how they build them, but to get TRD
with the power in the back was
a huge search. Yeah. And we found a couple of them, and I'm really fortunate for that. But I'm still trying to get that power system in the Tundra figured out. Like it's a 120 volt, 400 watt, I think, outlet.
I don't know anything about it really, other than it exists.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I thought, it'd be perfect for plugging a power station into. So while I'm driving, the alternator would charge it. But it doesn't work, for that. And it might be because the power station, when you're plugging it into an AC outlet, it's pulling more than 400 watts. And so that's just not enough in that truck system to handle that. But what will work for anybody who wants to go that way is the 12 volt charge system for those power packs. You can plug into the 12 volt cigarette style outlet in the truck, and that will charge your power pack while you're driving. And then you can use the outlets for whatever you want, but it just has to be under a 400 watt output. But yeah, so as far as solar and everything like that goes, fridges, all the above, there are more options than there've ever been. And I think really, like, this is a fundamental tenet of building an Overland rig that, you know, just transfers right over to our rigs. And that is, be honest about your needs. You know, are you touring across Australia for 4 weeks living out of your truck? Or are you heading out for the weekend and maybe one or two nights of camping, and only occasionally maybe you'll be out for a week? If it's the latter, you don't need as an elaborate a setup. Nowadays, the power banks, we lost Goal Zero. They went out of business for some reason or another. Mm. But Jackery now would be one of the...
Yeah, I've seen that.
Right,
name.
And then there's another one like Deep Blue or some kind of... I forget what the name is, but... There are different models out there. I'll just talk about the Jackery because it's what I'm working with now. Those power stations, if you charge them up at home, you give them a full charge, and you're just going out for a couple days, chances are, like, you could run a small powered fridge, you could charge your dog collars and anything else you need to out of that system for a couple days and just not even have to worry about it. And if you have the 12 volt cigarette style lighter charger, so when you're driving to and fro places, it's charging back up, you won't even need to bother with solar. If you're going to be parked in a camp for an extended period of time and not running your truck engine, and you want to keep that power station charged up and everything running, then yeah, you're going to need some solar. And there are a lot of options. You can get solar blankets that unfold. You can hang in places, put them across the hood of your truck. I know the GoFast has a whole setup, so you can put a solar panel up there and then just plug that into your power station, wherever it is. That's what I'm going to do long-term, is get just a built-in solar on top of the GoFast. And that way, too, if I'm like in a parking lot and the truck is parked for a long time, it can be charging my power station. And then fridges, you know, there are so many options, and you can get as, you know, technical or simple as you want. Like National Luna is a famous fridge brand in the overlanding world. And I think they're either South Africa. I think they're South Africa too. And they're incredibly efficient, incredibly well-built. They're very expensive and maybe just a little too fancy for your average guy. Like, I think the Dometic systems now are really solid, and they're just plug and play easy. And you get a Jackery setup and a Dometic fridge, and you'll be good. And you can pack all, like, in a 60 liter size fridge. They have like a built in little ice cube maker, which is great for cocktails. Yeah,
oh, really?
It's just perfect, like just the right amount. And you can get all the groceries you need in there for a few days. Plus, you know, if you dress your birds, like let's say you clean your birds in a way to where you just leave like one wing attached, like the standard Montana deal,
yep,
and put them in a Ziploc bag, you can tuck them in there too and not make a mess and keep the birds cold, you know, unless you're just getting into tons and tons of birds. But I don't shoot well enough to get that many birds. So Liz comes along, it's different.
At what point? Yeah, right, right. Yeah, yeah.
She's the pro.
At what point do the scales tip? Because I've never thought about this, because my camping and stuff is not that. But when does a guy or girl start thinking, okay, standard cooler is not going to do it. I need an electric fridge. Like, where's the tipping point?
You know, yeah, no.
Or like, what is the benefit, you know?
And I'm going to elaborate just a little bit here, because I know there's some people out there who are experts with, you know, top-notch standard cooler. So let's just take a Yeti, for example. You know, one of the Rotomolds. Sure. If you're a river rat and you've done things like the Colorado River, where, you know, 21 days, you put in and for 21 days you're on the river and you have to have all your food stuff in standard coolers, right? For 3 weeks. I do fishing trips with some of those guys, and they are geniuses at how to pack a standard cooler, right? So yes, it can be done. You know, a good Yeti freeze packs, freezing your meat and then layering it. So, you know, you've planned out each day and you're pulling from the top and you're not opening your cooler very often, right? You can do that and it's going to work.
That's way more seriously than I've ever thought of.
Dude, it is
cooler,
it is a science. They put those coolers in ice rooms, like I walk in freezers ahead of time, and it's a complete
season
science.
Or whatever, yeah.
Now, but there, you know, so the standard Yeti cooler done correctly will handle most situations for the weekend, no problem. But I would say what I love about a powered fridge is just how clean everything stays, dry, and you can set the temperature exactly where you want it. You don't have stuff freezing on the bottom and a little too warm on the top. It's like, it's going to keep everything at exactly 38 degrees. And birds the same, you know, you put birds in there, you're not worrying about the problems with keeping the meat. And so for me, it's more a luxury, right? It's not really a complete necessity. Because like I said, you can get as scientific about standard coolers as you want. And I know there's always going to be somebody out there like, I can go 3 weeks with my cooler. It's like, yeah, you can. But the average person, I would say and maybe answer your question too, Nick, like those of us who aren't professional river rats, you know, if you're going to be staying out a week or longer, I think the powered fridge then like really, really starts to help. You go on these long trips and you want to just keep things going. It also helps in this way. Like, it takes such good care of your food. You can stock up for a big outing. And when you come home, instead of everything being a mess or spoiled, or, you know, you just put it right back in your fridge and you can use it. Or you can just leave it in your fridge until the next weekend and everything just stays running and it's just one less thing you have to mess with, right?
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was like, what is, you know, the cost benefit analysis there. How are they for form factor? You know, do they less usable space than your comparable Yeti, or the more usable space, about the same?
I'd say about the same. But yeah, the difference with the powered fridges is you just have to have a setup to, you know, to have them secure. You can't just wing them into the back of a truck like a Yeti, you know, and throw a padlock on them.
Right.
And they, you know, they have to be plugged into some kind of power station or power outlet. So it's a little more elaborate as far as like how you harness the whole setup. And to that end, at least in the overlanding community, they have slide out systems. And like, if you've got the money and you want to play with all this, you can customize things, you know, exactly how you want. Cause the builders are there. People do these builds all the time. For me, I keep it as simple as this. I have a big back seat in the Tundra. I throw the powered fridge in there. I have the power station on the floorboards. I plug the fridge into the power station and the power station into my 12-volt outlet on my truck, and done.
Yeah. I was just going to ask where you put it. So,
and it's, you know, if I'm guiding, I'm not needing a powered fridge because I'm just doing day trips. But if I'm going out on my own for an extended period, that's what it looks like.
How about water? I think I saw water jugs in your, I mean, nothing fancy there.
Yeah. Water, you know, a huge essential, obviously running around with dogs. You got to have plenty of it, and then camping the same. Lots of different approaches to that, but what's working for me right now are the 5 gallon military style jugs. God, what's the manufacturer's name? It's slipping my mind right now, but
is it Reliance?
It's not Reliance. They make good just standard.
Okay, Rhino. Okay.
Yeah, these are different. They're military grade, which I like for the back of the truck and my dog water. I just know that I'm not going to poke a hole in them. The Reliance are nice for camping because you've got spigots and stuff on them. So I have a 5 gallon Reliance for my camp water, and then I have 2 5-gallon military jugs for the dogs. So I'm running 10 gallons of water. And those strap, I just use NRS straps and just strap them right into the side bed rails of the truck.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah, one of my buddies had one of those. But do you not struggle like with pouring water out of those do you have a smaller container that you're with the spigot that you're filling up bowls and bottles?
Yeah, for me, I unhook them occasionally. I slide them right out. They come out pretty easily. I'm fairly strong guy, so it's not a big deal to mess with the 5 gallon jugs. And then I have one of the Rufflin water tippers, you know, like the little dog bowls. So I'll just fill that periodically. That works great. And, yeah, I can tuck in my, like I have a big dry bag, like a river dry bag full of dog food and my dog bowls underneath that tucked in back there as well. Yeah, and that works great for me. I can fill those right there in the back of the pickup. I can just open the wing door and open the top of the jugs and stick those in there and fill them. So that's worked for me. When you have a rooftop tent, kind of a rail system on top of your topper, you know, with the crossbars, all that, like there are water containers that you can buy that mount up there that will heat in the sun and you can use them to take a shower and that sort of thing. I've thought of going that route at some point, even like to have, cause you can attach like a, a water sprayer unit, like a shower head type of thing on there. And I thought it'd be even useful for like rinsing birds and cleaning anything you needed to clean. So I might go that route at some point. And that makes me think too, of something we haven't talked about yet, which is an awning. And I'll be able to tell you more about that in the future. I have mine, but I haven't installed it yet. Kind of like the ladder, like from everyone I talk to, you just have to make sure that it is securely installed, like over-engineer it if you're going to be running around on really gnarly roads. So, you know, it stays mounted. But I look at the awning as a win for setting up camp, and especially in the heat, like they're set up to like create a ton of shade around your truck. So whether it's just lunchtime in the field and we all just want to come back and hang out in the shade and we're out on the prairie, or it's raining and we're looking for a place to get under, you know, out of the weather and cook dinner or whatever, I think there's a lot of value in a good awning system. So just another thing to throw in there.
Awesome. Briefly, what are you cooking on? I saw a little thing on the Eureka something.
Yeah,
or other.
It's God, I love this little grill. It's a Eureka. And, It's a grill with these little gas canisters. They look like the size of an aerosol bottle, and they just pop in there. You can grill anything you would normally, you know, want to grill on a home grill with these, and they're tiny and they tuck right into my slider drawers. And then I use a jet boil a lot for making coffee. Yeah. Everything's changed, right? Like when you go from the four-wheel camper, it's like this little kitchen on board. And now it's like you need a kitchen box, a good camp box. It's a little more like backpacking than luxury RV camping. But to me, there's a fun challenge in making that as nice as possible. And it also, there's an appeal. I do some adventure motorcycling too, and I like the simplicity of those camps. And so now I feel like the rooftop tent approach is right in between like the bare bone simplicity of an adventure motorcycle tent camp and like the luxury of a four wheel camper. It's you get a little bit of both, right? So whether it's how I make coffee, which is on the tailgate now with the jet boil, or my little grill, everything's done outdoors. And so you have to think through that and just have a nice, comfortable, easy to use outdoor system. But I'm liking it and it's working really well so far.
Awesome, buddy. Well, we've man, we covered a lot of ground. We could go into all sorts of other stuff, but we'll have to save it for another episode. Before we do that, anything else that we missed that you really wanted to
get
into or mention? I'll okay. give you a chance to talk about the guiding.
And no, there's just one thing that, as far as the build, like since like the, that's what this podcast is really about, you know, is the overlanding and the new build on a Gen 3 Tundra. I want to mention the bumper replacement I went with because it's...
Oh, yeah, I saw that, yeah. And you already hit a deer.
I've had two deer collisions already with my truck in less than a year. The first one I hit, I was on the interstate of all places, and man, it was crazy. It was just like, I probably glanced the other direction, glanced back at the road, and there was a deer in the middle of the interstate. There was no avoiding it. And that was while I was waiting to get this bumper replacement, right? They were back ordered. Yeah. So yeah, you know that story. Since I got the bumper on just a few weeks ago, I was coming back from a fishing bird hunting trip. And whitetail are crazy this way. You probably know this, but they will just missile into the side of your truck. Like there's no avoiding them at all.
I've had it happen to my Sequoia.
Yeah. So that happened the other day.
The dents are still there. Yeah.
That's what I'm going to just leave these as kind of a badge of honor. But, you know, because I run around a lot and I'm driving in the dark and I'm in a lot of deer prone areas, animal strike protection is a huge priority of mine. And with the Gen 3 Tundra, I had to look and look and look to find something that would work. But so it's worth mentioning, Iron Man 4x4 makes a bumper replacement for the Gen 3 Tundra, which is superb. I had to wait a long time for it because they were back ordered. But I talked to the guys personally. They were fantastic. They gave me a few comps on other things to make up for the weight and, you know, heard my sob story hitting a deer and everything. And they're very, very apologetic and tried to help out. But once the system, the bumper got put on, it works really well. All the sensors, all the tech works, and it's burly and will protect from animal strikes. So I just know how hard it is with that Gen 3 to find the right accessories. So that's why I'm putting that out there to people. If you want to protect the front of that truck, that's the best thing I found. So,
yeah. One of the other knocks that I've heard from people is doesn't have the recovery hooks on the front,
exactly.
But you can add them. Have you had to do that?
So,
or is that
comes
with the bumper?
You got recovery hooks, you got a skid plate, heavier duty skid plate area, place for a winch and, place to mount auxiliary lighting. So yeah, it fixes all those problems.
Yeah, got it. Yeah, that is one of the, by my assessment, those red recovery hooks are kind of like it's like a trendy thing on trucks. So you see them on all the GMs and everything. And I'll always catch your attention. They look kind of neat. So everybody's leaning into
look. For sure. you just got to make sure all that stuff functions. Like I know one guy put on some of those red hooks, and it just because they look cool, but I looked at him, I was like, man, you got to get the right rated hooks because these are actually going to break if you ever hook something to them. He's like, oh shoot, man, but they look cool. I'm like, I know, but just get the heavier duty ones.
Yeah, make sure they're attached to steel and not fiberglass or something.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it, man. This was a blast. It was great to catch up with you, and we'll have to do it again sometime. As far as like, if people have questions on the rigs or guiding or fit or anything like that, where should they go? How should they get in touch with
you? So I've set up an Insta account called Fins and Feathers Over Land. So the whole idea is there, we're chasing fins, we're chasing feathers, and we're doing it overland style. So that's on Insta. You can hit me up there with a message, anything you need. And yeah, that's the best source. So look forward to hearing from people there. I love talking this stuff. So yeah, hit me up if you have questions and I'll do my best.
Well, we appreciate it, man. This was a blast. And if your 13-year-old pointer's ready to head out again, but Hartley's indicating to me that his morning nap is over and he's ready to get out.
I think my 53-year-old bladder with coffee is telling me I need to go get out.
Yeah.
But Nick, man, come on out here like next year and let's do a camp together. Right? That would be the best way, you know, to really see all this. And maybe we'll go chase dusky grouse together in the high country in early September and before you go to the prairie.
That sounds like a dang good time to anybody.
Man, that'd be fun.
All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Best of luck the rest of the fall, and we'll keep in touch. And that does it for this episode of the Bird Chef Podcast, everybody.
All right. Take care.
Hey everyone, it's your host Nick here. One more thing before you go. Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Birdshot Podcast presented by Onyx Hunt. Be sure to subscribe and follow the show so you don't miss our next episode. And if you really love the show and want to contribute above and beyond what you already do by listening, you can do so by joining our Patreon community. Click the link in the show notes to this episode. You can sign up for as little as $5 a month. And if you do, I will send you some of these Birdshot Podcast can coolers and stickers as a thank you for doing so. Thanks, everyone. Catch you on the next episode of the Birdshot Podcast.